Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Science Bloggers Podcast. I'm David Latchman, and my guest this week is Matthew Muthu. Matt used to be a scientist working in the field of transcriptional biology, where he used certain techniques to direct embryonic stem cells to become motor neurons, in the hope they can be used to replace motor neurons lost to certain diseases, like Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS. Matt has given up life as a scientist to pursue his dream of being a stand-up comedian in Barcelona. And he tells us about his journey from the lab bench to being a stand-up comic. So, hi, Matthew. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well given the circumstances. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on. Yeah, I guess, you know, we're really going through a really difficult time, everyone, with the pandemic. So how is it affecting you personally right now?
So about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, I had left the lab to pursue science comedy full time. And I've been, so if your listeners don't know, I'm a comedian based in Barcelona. I'm from the States, though. I grew up in Ohio. And I've been living here in Barcelona for the last 4 years or so. And with this pandemic, all of my income has gone to zero completely. I've been making my living performing stand-up comedy in various bars and then touring my science comedy show. And so since the pandemic has started and we've all been locked down in quarantine here in Barcelona, I have, you know, no income but lots of free time. And it's been an interesting experience, to say the least.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, because being a comedian, you know, it's not exactly great when we have to socially distance ourselves from everyone.
So aside from that, I'm doing pretty well, though.
Yeah, that's good. So why don't you tell people a little bit about your scientific background? What did you do before you made that jump into science comedy?
So I studied transcriptional biology, essentially. And I went to grad school at Ohio State University, and there I was involved in a couple of different projects. One was using transcription factors to direct embryonic stem cells to become specific neuronal subtypes. We were interested in the motor neuron. And so what I did is I found a new way using transcription factors to direct these cells to become very specific types of motor neurons that reside in the spinal cord and innervate the limbs. And the hope was that one day that kind of technique would be useful in replacing motor neurons that die in things like ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease or spinal muscular atrophy. At the same time, our lab was interested in gene therapies. And so we developed some new viral vectors that infect the central nervous system really well. And that research has gone on to become wildly successful in a project that I didn't have much to do with, but I'd be happy to talk about at some point. Then I did a postdoc at New York University's Medical Center, the Langone Medical Center. And there I developed a new functional assay to determine which enhancers throughout the genome are active or inactive in any given cell type. And that was published in Nature Methods. And then I moved out here to Barcelona to work in a epigenetics lab. And the idea was that I was going to study how DNA methylation impacts enhancer usage in both brain cancer, you know, glioblastoma, or this type of autism that I'm very interested in called Rett syndrome. And then while I was here in Barcelona, I started doing stand-up comedy as a hobby for fun. And it turns out to be a huge passion in my life that I did not know I had.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, before we go into this science comedy aspect of it, what got you involved in neuroscience? What got you interested in neuroscience?
So that's a pretty good question. When you're in undergrad, it's really hard to know what it is that you're interested in. Like, when you look back at what your knowledge base was in undergrad compared to after grad school, it's stark, the difference. So I didn't really know what I was interested in. And then when I started grad school, they had a lot of professors come through and speak to the incoming grad students describing their research. And one guy, Brian Caspar, he was interested in the nervous system and developing gene therapy vectors for it. And he, part of his postdoc at the Salk, was actually a new method of treating ALS. And he showed a sick mouse. And then after his gene therapy, the mouse seemed, you know, 100% better. And like, so I saw that and I was like, this is a guy that's actually creating therapies and doing like real impactful work. I want to work for him. So I joined his lab and started on a couple of different projects, and then just found that, you know, the nervous system and its development to be endlessly fascinating. And with that, actually, I found what I found most interesting is that by tackling problems of neurobiology, you could also ask philosophical questions like, what is it about the brain that makes us be able to have conscious thoughts and think, you know, kind of trippy ideas like that. And so that's really where that passion was solidified and grew from that.
Oh, yeah. So what exactly is it about the brain that allows us to have conscious thoughts? Is that too deep?
Nobody knows. Still, we don't know. Though they're getting closer. And I don't study that particular question well enough to have a really smart answer to that question.
Yeah.
But I have some ideas.
Yeah, I know. It's something that we seem to always be to explore, you know, both in science and popular culture. But
yeah,
we just don't have an idea.
Yeah.
And maybe we will one day. I don't know.
We'll get there, yeah. And I think we'll be able to define the questions more precisely, and that'll allow us to really answer some things. I think one of the problems we have right now is that we don't really have good terminology to discuss things like feelings, you know? There's not like a strong empirical basis for that kind of stuff. So with the advent of, you know, functional MRIs and...
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, the questions seem simple, but,
yeah,
you know, what you may think of as consciousness or, you know, or feelings or anything may not be what I think of it as or another person is, you know. So we need definitions.
Yeah. And I think what we'll find is that what you think and what you feel don't matter. You know, in philosophy, there's the age-old question, well, how do I know that what you experience as orange is the same thing as I experience as seeing the color orange? And I think where this will go is that it won't matter what your individual experience is. We'll know what the neurological components are and how they react. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what's going to be important to answering these questions. But
yeah, basically, you know, we are just brains in a jar and we have all these organs that, you know, taking that data, and somehow our brains process that information to create, I don't know, something, a reality that we experience.
I mean, what's the worst case scenario? We find out that we really are just simulations in a matrix, huh?
Yeah, and that might actually be more plausible than anything right now. It's crazy. Yeah.
If this is the matrix, they need to reboot that, you know?
I do not like
this world we live in.
I was just going to say that, you know, or, you know, since I'm in physics, I think it's like, somewhere along the line, timelines diverge, and I want to go back to the other reality that...
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sure my alter would probably be like really cool about having me around. It's like, yeah, dude, that timeline seems like really sucky. You can stay here with me. We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. So, comedy now. It's, what exactly got you interested in comedy? I mean, how did that come about?
Well, so I had always had a love of comedy, like it was something my father enjoyed. And then, so I kind of learned it from, you know, watched comedians from him, and then just was really always interested by the form. I never had the courage to perform comedy until I moved here to Barcelona. And then one night somebody recommended me to go see a comedy show, like an amateur open mic that they had here. For kind of a different reason. And I showed up and I saw everybody perform, and they were all horrible. They were terrible. And I was like, oh, well, I could be at least that bad, you know? Like, I didn't realize the bar was that low. And at the time, I'd been dating a bit and saying the same funny stories on these dates time after time and buying drinks. I thought to myself, well, I could tell these stories on stage, and then, you know, maybe somebody will buy me a drink after, you know, for performing. So I decided to give it a shot, and I did well enough the first couple of times out. And then just performing, being on stage was such a thrill and a joy that I kept doing it, you know. And yeah, I ended up, you know, performing now, well, many nights a week and totally willing to do it for free. It's just, and enjoying like trying to write jokes and think of new material and seeing what the funny is, that it just, it really clicked for me. And not only that, but like the lifestyle around comedy fit me as a person more than the lifestyle around lab work. Like I'm a naturally kind of a messy, loud, spontaneous person. And those three attributes are terrible to have when you work in a lab. So it seemed to fit me more. And you can live pretty cheaply here in Barcelona. So I felt like the bohemian lifestyle that surrounds being a performing artist wasn't going to be too difficult. And so I jumped in basically with both feet.
So I also guess that if you perform in a bar, you also get free beer. Is that right?
Yep. Oh my. That's right. When you're on the amateur circuit and you're starting out doing open mics, that's how you get paid. You get two free drink tickets, and that was enough for me.
Well, I guess if I went into comedy, yeah, that might be enough for me as well. That's probably a very low bar. I shouldn't say that out loud.
Well, no, I mean, if you said you were in grad school for a bit, I mean, like I made a joke of it, but yeah, one of the arguments for becoming a comedian is that like while working in research, I was not getting paid very much anyway. So if the pay is the same, why not do something that's much more fun and fits my life better?
That's true. You know, and I often said like when I was in grad school is, we'll work for food, or if you make free food available, I'm in.
I mean, I remember being in grad school and planning my week around the seminars that had free pizza. So
I did that too. It's embarrassing, or you'd pretend to be in the department that you're in.
Yep.
And it's like, so what research do you do? Who do you, what group are you in? And you're like trying to avoid that question.
Yeah.
I think most people know it's like, oh, you're just here for the food, aren't you? Yeah, I am.
Yep. But then so is, I don't know, 70% of the audience anyway.
Yeah, that's probably true. So it's a universal kind of thing. So, you know, with how do you keep in touch with your former colleagues?
A few of them. Yeah, for sure. I think they all seem to follow me online. I don't know how they feel about my career change. Though a postdoc that I worked with when I was in grad school happened to be in Barcelona for a meeting, and he came to one of my shows. And then after the show, he was like, "Yep, Matt, I understand completely why you've changed. This is who you are." So
that's good. So do you know how their research has been impacted by COVID-19, by the pandemic?
Well, actually, I don't know too specifically. I have a friend in New York. So when I was working at NYU, I just spoke to her recently, and she was a virologist, and her lab is actually trying to get kind of non-pathogenic forms of the coronavirus in order to study. And so they seem to be very active and very needed. Everybody else, I'm not sure. I would hope that they're not going to lab and they're not working. But from what I've seen on Twitter, it seems like some labs are slow to adopt the lockdown mentality.
Oh, yeah. So that is one of the questions I've started asking now in the podcast. I think it's impacting different groups differently.
Yeah.
You know, some seem like it hasn't impacted them at all. And some,
wow,
their research has completely stopped. Some who have been doing research can now repurpose that towards, you know, research into the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2. So I don't know. It's just an interesting question to find out, like how much we are dealing with and what the potential fallout is going to be. Worrying.
Yep. Well, and the thing is that kind of lesser reasons why I left science is that it just rewards sociopaths, right? And a lot of PIs are sociopaths that don't really care much for the well-being of their students and their postdocs. And I can just imagine some PI being like, we're going to stay open. This is our chance to get ahead of the competition. I still want you to work 12 hours a day and da da da. So I worry. Now, do most of the people you speak to, they're all in the US?
No. It's just like you, it's an international group. One guy that I spoke to, I think he's doing cancer research in Canada. But he was in the US at one point in time, and then he moved to Australia, and then he's in Alberta.
Yeah.
But somehow his research manages to is related somewhat to SARS-CoV-2. And so some people in his group are actually doing that right now.
Wow.
But they're also like medical professionals in there. So you're seeing like some of the people with medical experience are actually being called to work in the hospitals and work with patients.
Yeah. I've heard of people being called to operate the testing machinery also.
Yeah. It's almost, if you have a little bit of that experience, you're being called to serve. And, you know, the thing is that it feels depressing to watch the news each day and see, oh, politicians totally mess things up. But it's also inspirational to see how people have stepped up, you know, despite some of these really bad decisions that politicians have made in the past couple of months. So,
yeah. It's one of the nice times to be a scientist, huh? Like, finally, it seems like what we do is important.
I hope that the public gets that message. You know, I think in the past few years, especially in the U.S., it has been very anti-science. And I think this pandemic is going to show us all the weaknesses in our political and economic systems. And I hope at some point we look at it and we make the necessary changes.
Yeah, you would hope so, for sure. You would hope so. But I don't know, man, the U.S. does not, the political side of things in the U.S. does not give me a lot of hope.
I know, it's the same thing here. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Not to get like too dark and depressing.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. We can move it back out of the realm of politics into back into science comedy or whatever.
Okay, so back into science comedy. I mean, I've watched some of your YouTube performances, but are there any specific themes that you like to focus on?
Well, no, and to be honest, I'm not even sure what you could have seen on YouTube. I'm developing a science comedy news show. Right. And I want it to be like a late night talk show or a daily show, but for scientists. And what I love doing is taking a science headline and turning that into a joke. And like I could do that every day of the week and be very happy and then interview other researchers. For instance, and this is just one that we saw in the past week. But apparently the Dark Energy Survey, which is a mapping survey run out of the University of Bath in England, they found evidence for new minor planets just past Neptune. And so like the joke would be like the discovery of minor planets past Neptune has inspired R. Kelly to become interested in astrology or astronomy, you know, which is, I'm sorry, that cracks me up. A better, more established joke would be something along the lines. So MIT is currently injecting zebrafish embryos with human cancer cells to enable large-scale drug screens. However, it begs the question, what do you call a fish with cancer? My suggestion would be finding chemo.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah. And it's so every day, like I get the Nature News newsletter or Science, was it Science Live? There's Science Direct. Every day there are new headlines and new things being discovered. And I like to poke fun at it. And I understand the research behind it and also have like a, you know, an eye towards the silly. So I'm really working towards making this to be my, you know, my path forward, my career in the future.
So are you going to be on YouTube? Like YouTube channel?
Yeah. The problem is that it's not enough to just write jokes and perform them. Now in this day and age, you have to become a social media maven. You have to know how to edit and produce videos and spread them and network and that's all stuff that I'm not really good at or comfortable doing, especially the social media side. Like I hate the idea of having to like self-promote and.
Yeah, I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
When I started this podcast, I hated talking about it, right?
Yeah.
And now you realize that the only way you're going to get guests to come onto your show, the only way you're going to get, you know, people to listen, you have to self-promote. And it's part of a job.
Yeah.
The advice that I can give, and this is something that I've observed with other people who are on YouTube, you know, what they have said, people who also do podcasts, is eventually you're going to have to start thinking of this as a business. You're going to have to start thinking of it as a media company.
Mm.
So you may be the only one employed by it, but you're going to be doing everything from the editing to writing to promotion. Hopefully one day you'll make enough money that you can start
paying somebody else to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of, so what I've been trying to do is tricking people into being excited about the project and doing that work for me. So right now I have a person who's going to be my social media manager, and then another guy who's interested in producing podcasts and videos, but not necessarily performing in them. And he's meant to edit this stuff for me.
Well, yeah, once you get your team, then yeah, I think you're good to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, have you thought of a name for your show?
Yes, I have. I created the name Science News for Humans because the idea was that, like, it was like a high concept. The show was going to be broadcasting from an alternate universe. And the idea was that we were going to be broadcasting to your Earth and your timeline, your universe, and telling you the science news that you're missing out on, the important stuff that we messed up back in my universe. And this is like anticipating a world where AI takes over. You know, and so rather than making science news for AI, who's running the show, we're making science news for humans. And so there's like all sorts of little built-in jokes for that. But it's really, I found after trying to produce this for maybe close to a year now, that like those high concept ideas are really difficult to produce on your own. So I don't know if I need to change the name of the show, because now it's just going to be a few minutes of science jokes and then an interview with a guest. And maybe we can do the more fun things later. So for now, though, the project is called Science News for Humans.
Okay, that actually sounds cool. I think it's a good concept.
Yeah.
You know, AI takes over the world and we're transmitting from an alternate dimension. I think
yeah.
There's a YouTube channel that explores movies, right? And it comes from aliens who have somehow gotten our EM transmissions. And and they're analyzing these movies through an alien's eyes. And it's
just
really interesting. I can't remember the name of it.
That's a brilliant take. Yeah, it's a little bit disheartening, though, because like anytime I have a good idea, you go online and somebody else is trying it, too. You know, there's just so many people in the world now that just mathematically, anything you can think of has also been thought 100 times over.
Well, so the other advice I can give, I was also did a startup company at one point in time. And the advice that I would give anyone is that whatever idea you have, consider the fact that at least three other people have that idea.
Mm.
And what's going to differentiate your idea from others is how you execute it.
Yep.
And, you know, so don't worry about who else has that idea. Because I think when you told me about it on Instagram, I actually told you about someone else who's doing something similar.
Yep. Yeah, you were like, oh, my friend does that. And then I looked at his YouTube and it's great. I mean, it's such well produced. He has that cartoon avatar to do it. Fantastic job by him.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when he first told me about it, I wasn't too sure about the cartoon avatar, but when he did his first episode, it was like, yeah, dude, you have something good here.
Mm.
So, you know, I still think it's something you can do. You just have to find your way of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, part of your personality.
For me personally, I mean, right now my advantage, at least from what I've seen, is that when performing live, I'm better than the other science comedians that I've seen. But whether or not that translates to YouTube, we'll see. And like, even if with YouTube and social media, it's first you build it and then 2 years later, you'll get growth, something like that. Like, so, well, I guess we'll just see. But for me, the online the online show and the social media. That's just, for me, that's an excuse, or hopefully it'll one day create a steady income stream. But like my passion is live performance, and I just want, that'll be my base, and then I can go and tour. I would love to just tour 3/4 of the year. But like, even touring is a question of promotion and, you know, convincing people to come out and see your show. So
yeah, it is. And, you know, with touring, it means not social distancing yourself. So
yeah, again,
it's very uncertain.
So for me personally, this next year is going to be probably extremely rough financially, but hopefully some good. Well, hopefully I'll get this YouTube thing up and running, and that'll become an online success or something. We'll see.
Or, you know, it'll become a success, then it can be one way you can promote yourself. So when you do manage to go on tour, whenever that happens, you know, it will be easier to get people to find you. And hopefully they'll be inviting you rather than you saying, will you please let me perform with you? You know?
Yeah, that's the best. So I've been invited to perform at a couple different places now, and that it really is just the greatest. They pay for everything. You show up, you just do your thing. Everybody is, you know, has been waiting and expecting you, and it's just, that's the best.
Yeah, so it's not like you're begging. It's like, please, can I perform there? I'll work for beer.
Yeah.
Rather, it's like, why don't you come perform for us? We'll pay for everything. You just have to show up.
Yeah.
Huge difference, I guess. So you're starting your YouTube comedy channel. Hopefully you'll be going on tour eventually when all of this is over. Do you have any other plans for the future?
No, I mean, the hope is that the YouTube show gets picked up and becomes a television show that I can produce here in Spain and sell to a channel in the States. That's my real dream. And then I can, you know, make it every day. And like the cost of living disparity is such that if I can even get a budget of like the cheapest reality TV show made in the States, but spend it here in Spain, I'll live like a king. So that's like my 5-year plan, is to get a television deal.
That sounds awesome. I hope it works out.
Yeah, me too.
So we have talked about quite a few things. Is there anything that you want to say before we start wrapping up?
Only to follow me on Instagram at Dr. Matthew Murtha. And at some point here, I'm going to start a Patreon page. And so please support me. Even a euro or a dollar or $5 would go a long way in my life. So aside from begging for money, no, I think I'm fine.
Okay. No, it's okay to beg for money. You know, it's like we all need it. And you know, especially in this trying time.
Yeah. So I would say to any of your listeners, if they're running podcasts or would like to be on a podcast, please reach out as well.
Okay, I'll be sure to do that. So I'll just put your social media links into the show notes, and hopefully it'll get you some interested followers.
Fantastic. Yep. And let me know when it comes out. I'll post it on to my network too.
Okay, I will do. And it was great having you.
Yeah, fantastic to be here. Thanks, Dave.
And hopefully when you make it big, we can talk again.
Yep. Well, I'll have to have you on my show when I get it off the ground.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Okay. All right. Take care, man.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Matt, and we'll check him out and follow him on social media as he gets his science comedy channel off the ground. Links to his social media accounts are in the show description. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, or leave a comment wherever you listen to this episode. Everything you do not only helps, but I would love to hear from everyone listening in. And be safe and stay healthy if you can. And I look forward to having you with me next week when I introduce you to a new guest and a new episode.